From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
There is tragic violence in Chicago. I'm not going to comment about the mayor's failures today about these police shooting incidents. My personal view is the violence stems primarily from lack of opportunity, the lack of a future that these young people see for themselves, and then they turn to gangs and they turn to violence. That's the core problem, and that means schools, that means jobs, and that means supporting families. We have a tragic loss of two-parent families in so many communities. That's the core problem.
With well more than 100 people shot in Chicago in just the first 2 weeks of 2016, Governor Bruce Rauner says the solution to the violence there is passing his pro-business, anti-union agenda. Rauner's been in office for 1 year this week. He gave a series of interviews at the state capitol. We'll talk about that and more on this edition of State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel on State Week includes Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our State Capitol Bureau, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, Amanda Venicky, State House reporter Brian Mackey, and our guest, Doug Finke of Gatehouse News, which includes the Springfield State Journal Register, the Peoria Journal Star, and papers in Rockford, Lincoln, Macomb, and Galesburg, among others. Little side note, for 17 of the last 21 years, I've been involved with State Week, either as a host or panelist. Today is my final episode as a host as I retire from the station. I appreciate your support of the program through the years. So Rauner sat down for 10-minute interviews, assembly line style, with a lot of media outlets because this was his one-year anniversary. Amanda Venicky and Doug Finke, you both had a chance to take part in those 10-minute interviews. Tell us about them.
Well, from my vantage point, the governor really did stick to his standard talking points. A lot was heard about the turnaround agenda, as you just heard from him there, when it comes to Chicago violence and helping the city, as well as asked a question about what his plans are for economic development downstate. The answer time and time again was his pro-business reforms. His answer often also was that it is House Speaker Michael Madigan who is standing in the way and who is at fault for everything. I asked him another question. I said, so, you know, during the campaign, we heard a lot about your criticism of former Governor Pat Quinn and how he was responsible for dragging Illinois into this death spiral. But Governor Rauner, it doesn't seem as if you've been able to do anything about Michael Madigan. Is it just that government is hard, different than business, or is it that Michael Madigan is all that powerful? He didn't really address that question directly, as was at least my experience in many of these questions. You know, he answered them, sat for about 10 minutes or so, but was not pointed in any of his responses very much. So yet again, like I said, turnaround agenda, Mike Madigan is at fault. And that was really my perception of it. I'll add that it's difficult because in this sort of situation, you know, as a journalist, you want to press back on these points and say, well, hey, what about this? You didn't answer the question. But they really are very the governor's press aide is standing right there with the clock. You get the motion. You've got to wrap up at 10 minutes. I kind of skirted it and got one last question in when I felt like he hadn't responded to my final question. But it is not a full opportunity where you can really engage and have a full conversation with the governor because time is so limited. Doug?
Yeah, that was exactly my impression. And I think if you read the coverage that has come out from pretty much every media outlet that had these interviews, there wasn't really much new ground broken. He dropped a couple of hints here and there. He talked about wanting to do education reform next year and purchasing reform and to address the consent decrees that the state operates under now and costs an enormous amount of money. He didn't offer any details of how he's going to approach any of those things. But for the most part, Amanda's right. He took the opportunity to repeat a lot of his turnaround agenda, to repeat that he's still wants to get that passed. and you know, just did not break much new ground. And frankly, I don't think anybody going into this really thought that he was going to.
No signs of letting up, he said. Persistence is key. I will very much actually give the governor credit for, it was really about 2 days that he spent, it seems, the majority of his time giving these interviews with various media outlets. And I have to say that, you know, just in my experience covering just two other governors, Blagojevich and Quinn, they were neither were keen on doing that. And Blagojevich often, you know, fled the press. Quinn did not. I think he had a lot of open media availabilities, but he was not often giving one-on-one interviews, despite, I know on my behalf, years of repeated requests wouldn't grant such a thing. So while the governor sticks to his talking points, and, you know, it's frustrating because I think probably for listeners, and whether you agree with Rauner, and I think there are a lot of people that have had the response, you know, go get them, Rauner, stick with it. We voted for you because we want somebody with conviction to stand up to Michael Madigan. Of course, for every one of those, there seems to be a critic that blames him for driving Illinois into a deeper fiscal hole. The governor, at least, you know, goes and has his say and made himself available through journalists to the wider public.
To his credit, he did the interviews. I know many people have tried to get interviews with him over time, and they have not been successful. So at the one-year anniversary, he did agree to sit down to these. Having said that, it was very limited time, and you don't have a chance to do follow-up questions. And that's often where you a person reveals himself, where they can add some details, where you can challenge someone on things that they've said. And just because of the time constraints, that opportunity was not there.
I would also add that, I mean, it's so clear that they had a message to get out. I mean, Doug, you had in the State Journal Register here in Springfield a big kind of one-year anniversary look at the, you know, Rauner's time in office. And that same day, the Rauner administration had submitted a very long op-ed touting his own accomplishments that ran in the paper. And then, of course, the very next day, he started doing these interviews. But, I mean, they very clearly have these talking points they want to get out. And I think there's no more striking example of that than when Amanda asked him about violence in Chicago and what are you doing to address that. He, as we heard at the top of the show, he turned it back to his pro-business turnaround agenda. Well, it turns out the governor does have some more nuanced and interesting things to say about the problem of criminal justice in Illinois. On Thursday morning, he showed up at the Criminal Justice Commission that he appointed. It's looking at reducing the prison population. And he gave a very full endorsement of their work. So it seems like, you know, he could have said some of that stuff when he was talking to Amanda about how to, you know, improve the criminal justice atmosphere in Illinois and, you know, improve safety as well as reducing the prison population and getting into some of that stuff. But he very clearly was focused on this pro-business, anti-union agenda that he's been pushing pretty much since he got into office.
And you mentioned that he was Thursday at that conference and touted the commission. What was he touting exactly?
He's basically this commission he set up. He said, reduce the prison population. We need to reduce the prison population by 25% over the next 10 years. A little bit of background. Illinois' prisons are at about 150% of their capacity in the aggregate. There are some individual prisons that are literally at 200% of their capacity. There have been lawsuits in other states over this kind of crowding. He says the conditions there are unacceptable. He spoke kind of as though he was personally moved on his visits to the prison. He said that his spirit feels crushed when he visits a prison. They don't have to be crushing to the human spirit. Not the kind of rhetoric you're used to hearing from politicians when they're talking about criminals and offenders. And, you know, even Governor Rauner himself has run some of these political ads during his campaign against former Governor Quinn, talking about, you know, making us less safe and playing on people's fears a little bit. But he basically gave a full-throated endorsement to what the commission has recommended so far. They're still working. They still have to get to some of the more contentious political issues that could be more challenging for him to support and for certain legislators to support. But so far, he seems to really be embracing this cause of criminal justice reform.
Quick question on that. What could he do just, say, through executive order? I mean, Pat Quinn was able to let a lot of people out secretly, so to speak, at the time. Is that something this governor could do? Does he need a legislature to reduce the population?
to really get to the significant levels of reduction he's talking about, yes, he does need the legislature, because some of that is going to be looking at truth in sentencing, right? If you, there are a lot of crimes in Illinois, murder is one, but there are even other offenses in Illinois that you really have to serve your entire term, even no matter how many, how well behaved you are in prison, how many classes you take, there's no getting out early. But there are some things within the Department of Corrections that he could do administratively that would work at the margins a little bit. I mean, a few hundred there, maybe even a few thousand, but really getting at the level what he's talking about, which is 12,000 inmates, 12,000 fewer inmates in Illinois, is going to take legislative action.
And I would add, it's probably going to take a bit of money, too, in the sense that one of the things that experts have said over the years is that Illinois, rather than using the Department of Corrections to actually correct people, in other words, rehabilitate people, we just don't have the commitment in terms of the financial resources to provide the vocational training, the substance abuse treatment, the alcoholism abuse treatment, the mental health issues being addressed that would be needed to take someone and have the time that they spend locked up being used as a way of literally correcting their behavior and then preparing them with an education, with job skills, so that when ultimately they're released, they're able to integrate themselves back into society. And it's going to be costly, but the long-term benefits are great for that investment. Part of the problem with our overcrowding is I think our recidivism rate is something like 50%. And that means that someone who's let out of Stateville today, within 3 years, is back in the Department of Corrections because he's reoffended.
Although some of that recidivism is just, you know, technical violations, and you know, that's some of the things that the commission is looking at. You know, people, recidivism could be you go back and hold up another liquor store, or it could just be you didn't show up on time for your appointment with your probation officer, or I should say parole officer, and he's having a really bad day, and maybe he doesn't like the cut of your jib and decides to violate you back on that.
But how big is the caseload for those?
I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but as you said,
isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and the resources that actually came up in that Thursday morning meeting. One of the there's a state's attorney who's on this commission who said, you know, a lot of the things we're talking about are going to cost money, and a lot of people are worried that we're not going to be able to fund these recommendations. And the governor said, you know, there's no question that to save money in the long run, sometimes you have to spend money in the short run. I was talking to somebody who said, you know, the way the governor is approaching criminal justice, you know, there could be a benefit for people who are interested in seeing changes there, given that he has sort of wholeheartedly embraced it and kind of political winds, throwing caution to the wind, just kind of charge in. Some of the same things that have been so difficult for him and some of his anti-union and pro-business agenda getting, you know, winning support. People are hoping that maybe that'll be an asset if he can bring Democrats on board and apply the same sort of charging attitude towards doing some of these criminal justice changes.
I want to go back to something Doug alluded to when he was talking about the discussions, the sit-downs with Governor Rauner this week. Rauner said he would outline a plan to get Illinois out from under the court-ordered spending that's plunging the state into debt during the budget stalemate, or at least saying that's what's plunging the state into debt. I realize he has not provided details, and how does one surmise that he would propose getting out from under court orders to free it up for the budget?
You've got me.
Right.
The fact of the matter is, when you're dealing with consent decrees or any of these court orders, obviously they are issued by a court. And the only thing I can fathom is that you're going to have to go back to court and convince a judge that you are taking steps to address the problem that led to the consent decree or the court order in the first place. And, you know, I don't see any way the administration could just wave their hand and say, well, we're not going to do this one anymore because it costs us too much money.
Well, that, and he didn't mention it in here, but perhaps also continuing appropriations would be something. That's why local municipalities got all of their money, because that's one of those things that is just on autopilot. And whereas Rauner has made these statements now, I know that his budget director, Tim Newding, has been actually talking about this for a while, of something that is frustrating in terms of his experience in trying to manage the budget when there is no budget plan, and talked about a desire to cut back on these. This is, however, what I mean when I, you know, asked the governor in this limited time, so I'm not sure totally got to it, but how difficult it is, and, you know, was he wrong to have placed this blame on Quinn or previous governors? This is what I mean. I mean, government isn't like a business in that just because you want to do it, or maybe even if you believe it is prudent, let's say there was an agreement. It's tougher than that. It's not just one branch. There isn't a unilateral decision. Anything, it takes a long time to do things. And so it's just a totally different ballpark.
And I think one of the problems that the state is facing now with these court orders is that in some or maybe most of the cases, the judge looks at what the spending was under the previous budget and basically decrees that continue until there's some resolution of the problem. And of course, the state right now is spending money way faster than it's taking it in. So if the court decrees were issued for some kind of lesser amount, that might make some difference. But I believe in many cases that is not the case. They're basing it on last year's budget, and we're not taking money in at the same clip that we did a year ago.
Well, and part of the problem is that the reason we have all these consent decrees is because some group, generally a do-gooder group, representing a number of people who are marginalized, if you will, on the fringes of society, comes in and says the federal law requires or state law requires that you provide these services to people with developmental disabilities. You haven't been doing that. And the state, rather than admit, yeah, we haven't been meeting the law, enters into one of these consent decrees. And as the term consent implies, it's not an order where the judge tells the state you have to do something that you don't want to do. The state, at least on the record, agrees. They consent to provide services at this particular level. And the way you get out from under the consent decree is at some point come back to the judge and say, here's what we're doing. Here are the additional caseworkers that we've hired to investigate child abuse. Here are the additional home care personnel we've put on to help developmentally disabled people being able to live in a less institutionalized setting. And this meets the requirements of the law. And you convince the judge that you have made those changes sufficient to protect the rights of the people who were the plaintiffs in the case. And so to get out of them, in a sense, it's easy. You just have to do what you're supposed to do. And it's not something that you can blame on Governor Rauner. It's not something you can blame on Governor Quinn. Not something you can blame on Governor Blagojevich solely. Some of these consent decrees go back literally decades in terms of services being provided to people with developmental disabilities, victims of child abuse, that sort of thing.
But you're still talking about spending money.
That's what I'm saying. You have to put the money in to do it. And if we would make that investment, the judge would say, fine, after you've shown me over a period of time that you're committed to doing what you're supposed to, yeah, then we can dissolve the consent decree.
This is State Week. Our panel, Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Amanda Venicky, Gatehouse News, Doug Finke, and I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Later in the week, Rauner's office released a memo talking about higher education. Higher education remains one of the wings of state government that's still not getting funded yet. No consent decree, no other agreement there. To the folks at the Capitol, what did the governor's office come out and say in that statement, and what point were they trying to make?
Basically, the governor's office, it was interesting because it literally came out with this memo just as a press conference and a filing of legislation was going on. So trying to make a point, the governor has, I should say, been asked repeatedly, what about universities? You say you care about education. He says that's from, you know, cradle to career. And yet, because they aren't getting funded, people have been suspicious of that. And he says, you know, I do care. But this memo seems to get at a hypothesis that I know I'm throwing it out there as a possibility, and others have said as well, that perhaps the governor really wants a shakeup of higher universities and of higher education. And because he knows that legislators won't go along with it, maybe you kind of force a crisis, as we've talked about, and that's the way to do it. This memo kind of hints at his frustrations. He says that, yeah, sure, universities, you're crying you want money now, but look at what your administrations have done. He talks about basically accuses them of excessive compensation for top administrators and giving golden parachutes, looking at the University of Illinois' former chancellor and former president, for example, the use of private jets by top figures at Southern Illinois University, board meeting costs, and the like. So it's really this whole list, also using state funds to lobby the state. And he specifically, and interestingly, it seems to be particularly antagonistic, names Senator Dick Durbin's wife as getting paid $627,000 over 13 years to help lobby Eastern Illinois University. And that's one of the universities that is believed to be suffering the most from lack of state funding. And it comes even as Chicago State University, which is the Illinois' only majority black student body university, is really saying that it's going to have trouble and may well have to shut down during the spring semester unless the state comes through.
Well, I think one of the interesting things of that particular memo was that they seem to be kind of tone deaf to the fact that some of the things that they're criticizing can be turned right back on the administration. There are a number of top people in the governor's office who are being paid a lot more than what Pat Quinn paid his people. And the answer was, you have to pay these high salaries if you want to get top-notch people. And I think the universities at the presidential level say the same thing. They give people golden parachutes. If I'm not mistaken, the state school superintendent had a special deal so that when he was hired on under the Tier 2 pension system, and the state board decided that they were going to provide him with the same level of benefits that he would receive had he been hired under the more generous Tier 1 pension system. So it struck me that a lot of the criticism was kind of like, well, look in the mirror yourself. And what's more, the problem in higher education, as I see it, isn't so much the concern of the universities per se immediately. Rather, it's the absence of money to help low-income students pay college tuition and other costs, the monetary assistance grants. Most of the institutions in Illinois floated the grants for the students in the first semester. Now we're hearing that for this coming spring semester, maybe half of the schools aren't going to be able to carry the students anymore.
No, it was far less than half of them, I think.
I think it was, when you include public and private, it was, and community
college. Half of those
college,
that responded to the survey.
Yeah, who responded to this particular survey. Yeah.
Sorry for interrupting.
And what to me was even more worrisome, and I think would be particularly traumatic for a family, is some of the institutions suggested we may have to come back and try and get the money that we upfronted you for the fall if the state doesn't come through for us. And so if I'm somebody who's from that kind of a family, and I'm worried about how am I going to pay for my tuition, and now they're going to send my bill for last year to the collection agency. I mean, that to me is a real fear. That's what needs to be addressed. And that's what that news conference was about. The news conference wasn't about money for the universities per se. It was money to cover monetary assistance program grants for the spring semester.
Do you envision that we'll see something dramatic before the legislature come up with higher education then in this coming session?
You know, I think that that is a question that everybody would love a crystal ball to come to the aid and have that answer. A lot of universities are in Republican districts. So while Rauner likes to often say Madigan's looking ahead to the next election, nothing's going to happen until after that, I think Republicans are in the same boat. All politicians are looking at that next election. So that could be some very big pressure. Again, CSU, Governor Rauner has made a lot of effort to reach out to the African-American community, and to have that be on his shoulders could be something that forces and presses the issue. But then again, it's really just hard to say. Neither side, as we've talked about, shows any signs of giving in to the broader questions about budget, taxes, and the so-called turnaround agenda.
All right. As I wrap up my time hosting State Week, I did want to play a bit of archive audio. I always enjoyed Representative Bill Black when he was in the House, and his oratorical skills combined with sarcasm and attempts at humor sometimes made for good audio, which we in radio liked. These comments came into mind to me yesterday as I heard about another effort at the Capitol. This one is to create a system that would automatically register voters when they get driver's licenses. Democrats put forth a proposal on that. Now, these comments come from early in the last decade, but they resonated with me, and I remember that I had these comments on hand. This was Bill Black talking on the floor when the legislature was discussing at the time allowing people to register to vote over the Internet. Black said, at the time, it seemed like people had all sorts of excuses why they couldn't get out and register and why they couldn't get out and vote.
It's too hot. It's too cold. It's too wet. It's too dry. It's too difficult. I've had it up to here with that excuse. An hour ago, we put the World War II Memorial checkoff ballot, the bill, out of here with the unanimous vote as we should have. When I think of what that generation went through, year after year in foxholes, in mud and blood, and 500,000 of them died to give me the right to continue to vote in a free election, I don't have any time or patience for anybody today who tells me it's too hard to vote. It's too hard to register. That's a cop-out. That's a cop-out. If that's all these people think about what people have given us, a republic, a democracy, and all of the people that have sacrificed over the years, you can register by mail. You can register by postcard. Now I assume, and I'm not going to vote against the gentleman's bill. I know we're in the 21st century and times have changed, and so now we may be able to vote by Internet. What will it be next? The glare of the screen is too hard on their eyes, so they can't vote. At some point, elective bodies in all 50 states are going to say, if you don't want to vote, then by God, don't write me any letters and don't complain. People should get out there and vote, and I've had it up to here with all the excuses to why they don't. I'll vote for this stupid bill, but anybody comes to my office and tells me that they won't vote unless they can vote over the Internet, you know what I'm going to tell them? Go somewhere else. Go to Cuba. Go to Haiti. Go to Brazil. Go to the old Soviet Union. You're too tired to vote? Then go somewhere else. And nobody will do it. Nobody will do it. Is anybody in this chamber going to get in an old leaky rowboat tonight and row to some other country? We're still the beacon of the world, the best country ever devised by mankind, and I'm just sick and tired of hearing this whining. It's too hard to vote. You've got to make it easier. Ah, baloney.
And that is State Representative Bill Black from early in the 2000s, and that's my time for State Week. Thanks to Doug Finke for joining us as a guest. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. Thanks to Bob Meyer for his production assistance for the last 15 years or so. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.